Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. The results from the August primary election are now official, and the general election campaign is underway. In 8.5 weeks, voters will go to the polls to elect a slate of both statewide and legislative candidates. What will be the key issues in these contests, and what factors could influence the outcome of some of these races? We've got a great group of political reporters here to answer these questions and to discuss the people and issues of Campaign 2014. With us today are VPR's Pete Hirschfeld, Terry Hellenbeck of the Burlington Free Press, and Ann Galloway of VT Digger. It's great to have you all here. Really appreciate you coming by and being with us today.
Sure, Bob. Thank you, Bob.
Good to be here.
And you can join the conversation here. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. What are the biggest issues of Campaign 2014 for you? Are there some very specific issues that you want to see the candidates address? Perhaps there's some races that you feel very strongly about. Let us know. Give us a call. Do you think either the governor's race or the contest for lieutenant governor will end up being a referendum on single payer? And has that rocky rollout of Vermont Health Connect, the state's healthcare exchange, influenced how you think about single payer? For some people, it's encouraged them to support single payer. For others, it's had the exact opposite. And perhaps property tax reform or school governance are important issues for us. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Let's start with the governor's race. We have four major party candidates. Incumbent Democrat Peter Shumlin is running for a third term. Scott Milne is the Republican candidate. Dan Feliciano is the Libertarian candidate. Peter Diamondstone is the candidate of the Liberty Union Party. So as we start the gubernatorial campaign, I'd love to get your opinions, sort of an overview of how you see this race unfolding. Does Peter Shumlin have some weaknesses? What do these candidates have to do to make this a competitive race? Pete, what are your thoughts on that?
In terms of what the candidates have to do to make this a competitive race, they have to find a winning message. They have to raise the money needed to broadcast that message on television, radio, print. And then they probably also need for Peter Shumlin to either make some significant mistakes or for some economic misfortune to befall the state sometime between now and the middle of October. Peter Shumlin has some political liabilities, to be sure. Neither Scott Milne nor Dan Feliciano has really shown an aptitude or ability yet to really exploit those liabilities and vulnerabilities. And unless they can demonstrate either some message or some appeal in some capacity to raise money that they haven't to this point, Peter Shumlin will remain the prohibitive favorite in the governor's race.
Terry, what do you think?
Well, for sure, an incumbent has a huge advantage, and Peter Shumlin has a lot of money compared to his opponents not having a lot of money. But I think he's pretty vulnerable on the health care issue, where, you know, just the rollout of Vermont Health Connect, how in the heck are you going to make this single-payer plan work in the next 2 years? It just seems so implausible that I think that can be exploited. It hasn't entirely been yet. I think there's still time. The turnout of the primary showed us not many people were paying attention so far. But I think if Scott Milne is going to make that point, he's going to have to start doing it real soon to shift the message that Dan Feliciano is trying to project, that Scott Milne can't say these things. I think he has. Scott Milne has been trying to say that Peter Shumlin screwed up Vermont Health Connect and can't possibly make this new plan happen. But he's got to convince people that he is saying that and saying it more clearly and concisely.
And what are your thoughts?
Well, I think Governor Peter Shumlin has weaknesses, certainly, but there's no one there to exploit them. You know, Eric Davis said a few weeks ago that if Randy Brock had decided to run against Shumlin, he would have had a very good shot at actually winning. And that's because the governor has an approval rating of 49%, according to a poll that Castleton did for us last spring. But he also has high negatives, 40% of Vermonters disapproved of his performance. He not only has this problem with Vermont Health Connect, which has been a real debacle and has been going on for a year, and he's just now gotten around to essentially firing CGI, the contractor that had gotten in the way and has finally done some rearranging in his administration to deal with it. But he's also had trouble with, you know, the Department of Children and Families and the toddlers who died and how that was handled. And, you know, there was the Jeremy Dodge story that Pete Hirschfeld broke in the Times Argus.
That was the land deal?
Yeah, that was the land deal in which, you know, the governor essentially was perceived to be not dealing with a neighbor who has a disability very fairly. So those kinds of things, I think, have been real liabilities for him. But I don't think that there's a candidate out there who's really bringing up those issues. I mean, Scott Milne has no money, no message, no name recognition. He's held very few press conferences. Dan Feliciano is kind of filling in the gaps a little bit. But he isn't a politician and really doesn't have a spiel that people are listening to.
Today in the program, we've got a reporter's roundtable looking at the people and issues of campaign 2014. What are your thoughts? Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Is it health care? Is it education? Overall taxes? What are the key issues for you this election year? 1-800-639-2211. You can send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net. Better still, give us a call. 1-800-639-2211. Well, let's look at the issue of health care. It's no secret that Peter Shumlin wants Vermont to become the first state in the country to implement a single-payer system. He wants to do it as early, perhaps, as 2017.
So let me be very clear. I have never been more convinced of the need to keep moving forward. I have never been more certain that we're on the right path. And I've never been more committed to ushering in America's first universal, affordable, publicly financed healthcare system right here in Vermont.
Now, GOP candidate Scott Milne says he wants to see the details of the governor's plan before he opposes it. And this position has drawn some strong criticism from conservative Republicans. They're very upset with Milne. But he doesn't think that their position is very helpful in finding a way to provide all Vermonters with affordable health care.
I believe our fighting this ideological battle within the Republican Party when my campaign is really built on finding practical solutions for the problem. So what I've said is very clearly, we've got a governor who's had three terms to come up with how we're going to pay for the system, how it's going to work, and has been unable to do that. And we're working very hard to have a system in place that's going to provide accessibility to health care for Vermonters and not chase doctors out of state.
And then there is Dan Feliciano. He says he doesn't need to wait to see the governor's proposal because Feliciano is convinced that single payer is a terrible idea. And he says it was a mistake for lawmakers to design a health care exchange that would be the first step towards single payer.
The real answer to this question is to fulfill Peter Shumlin's fantasy of being the first governor to implement single-payer health care. The governor has disregarded the needs of Vermonters in his quest. There is a better way. We can provide affordable health care choices to Vermonters, but the government needs to get out of the way.
So I guess, Ann, the question for a lot of folks, and Terry touched on this, the rocky rollout of Vermont Health Connect, does it turn into a real political liability for Peter Shumlin, or does he weather this storm?
Well, there's no question he is going to be reelected. I think the question is whether or not the Democrats, his allies in the legislature, are going to support the financing plan and single payer. I think there's a lot of anxiety in the legislature now because of the problems with Vermont Health Connect. If the Shumlin administration can't handle this project well, the question is, can they pull off this even bigger project? That's what's out there. That's the buzz. That's what people are talking about. And so I think that while the Republicans and Feliciano may be able to put a few chinks in the governor's armor over the course of the election cycle, There's no question that he's going to be reelected. He has the money, he has $1.2 million in the bank, as Terry was saying, and he has the name recognition. And there are other aspects of his administration that people are very happy about. So, but there is a lot of anxiety about this, and the fact that he hasn't released the financing plan, and a lot of it would come from taxes, again, has made people very nervous. And during the legislative session, I think you're going to see a complete overhaul of all taxes in Vermont. We're going to deal with everything at once, property tax, health care, the whole shebang.
That makes for a very exciting session.
Yeah.
Pete, as Ann mentioned, the governor was supposed to have this financing plan in January of 2013. He punted. Then he said, I'll do it in the 2014 session. He punted again. Now he says, I'll do it in January of 2015, which conveniently is 2 months after the election. Do you think that this is an issue in this campaign, or does Governor Shumlin kind of get away with postponing the financing plan another time?
I think he gets away with postponing the financing plan another time. If you look at most of the polling numbers, the majority of Vermonters either support unequivocally single-payer health care, or they aren't really sure whether they support it, but they're open to the concept. And Peter Shumlin is selling this idea. It's health care for all, uncoupled from employment, paid for in a way that reflects individual Vermonters' ability to pay. And who can argue with that, right? I mean, that's a difficult concept to disagree with. And I think that he's going to be able to ride the sort of warmth and fuzziness of that idea through November. The moment that he puts a financing proposal on the table is the moment that this becomes less about all the benefits of single-payer health care and about the taxes that he's going to have to use to pay for it, whether it's a double-digit income tax, whether it's a double-digit payroll tax increase. And it will suddenly become a much more, you know, the political saleability of this thing in many ways depends on there not being a financing plan for people to talk about right now. So I doubt we're going to see him come forward with anything before the beginning of November.
Right. I think that needs to be exploited if someone wants to be successful. But I think I'd go back to challenge the notion that Eric Davis has that Randy Brock would have been just doing fine in this election. I think that he was unable to get traction on that same argument 2 years ago. So I'm not sure that he would be that much more effective at it this year. I think people would be like, oh, I think I heard you say that 2 years ago, and I didn't get it then. And I'm not sure that he would be that much better at articulating it. But I think there's a message there to be articulated of how do you not give us a plan before the election and just let us go blindly into this?
Let's go to our callers and talk to Lewis in Burlington. Hi, Lewis. Welcome to the program.
It's Bruce. Anyhow, I heard one of the governor's representatives talking earlier about Healthcare Connect and how about all the problems. And they said, well, if we just go to single payer, we can get rid of all these problems. It sort of sings of a lack of effort on their part because they just want to use problems with this as an excuse to go to single payer rather than pointing out the fact that messing with the system is creating all these problems. And if you want to cover the people who don't have coverage, use the old system, just pay for it rather than try and come up with a whole new system managed by people who don't know how to run health insurance.
Okay, Bruce, we appreciate your phone call. And this is what a lot of the supporters of single payer are saying. You know, it's the Vermont Health Connect is complicated. You got to enter all this information in. You got to coordinate with the IRS and the insurance companies. Hey, single payer, if you're a resident of Vermont, you're covered. How could it be more simple than that? So that's their comeback there. Is that effective?
Well, I'm not sure that it's been fully articulated, and maybe we'll hear more of those arguments from Dean Corin, who's the lieutenant governor candidate who represents the Progressive Party, who's a big believer in single payer. But I think they would also tell you that the difference would be that there would be one administrator who would handle everything, and I think that there's an assumption generally that that administrator would be Blue Cross Blue Shield of Vermont, the big nonprofit that handles a lot of insurance for Vermonters now. So if that were the case, because Blue Cross Blue Shield handled the Vermont Health Connect difficulties so quickly with businesses, I think a lot of folks in the single-payer camp think that that could be done again. We'd sidestep all these problems with the website, because it wouldn't be necessarily about a website anymore. It would be we might get rid of that layer.
Today in the program, we've got a reporter's roundtable looking at the people and issues of Campaign 2014. What are your thoughts? 1-800-639-2211. Give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. We've got a reporter's roundtable today with Ann Galloway of VT Digger, Terry Hallenbeck of the Burlington Free Press, and VPR's Pete Hirschfeld. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. Let's just sort of tie up some loose ends with the governor's race. Peter Shumlin likes to say that Vermont has the lowest second lowest unemployment rate in the country, and that he's created more than 10,000 new jobs during his 4 years in office. Shumlin has made the creation of alternative energy jobs a top priority.
That this is not only about moving from oil to other ways of powering the future for our planet, it's also about growing jobs and economic opportunities for Vermonters.
Now, Terry, there are some other statistics that paint a less rosy picture. Revenues from the income tax are not meeting projections, and the number of people employed in Vermont this month is roughly the same as the number of people who were employed when Shumlin took office. So could the economy become a factor in this campaign?
Sure. I think a lot of people are not feeling like the recession is over. I think that wages haven't kept pace or people are underemployed. The thing about those statistics is they're easy to throw around if you're to make it sound like they are in your favor, whichever side you're on. So I think the public, the voter, gets confused about that. So it'll come down to perhaps a gut instinct of are you better off than you were 3 years ago?
Now, Peter Shumlin has more than $1 million in the bank. In comparison, Scott Milne has raised roughly $50,000. He's lent his campaign $25,000. He says he wants to turn this campaign finance liability into an asset.
We know we're going to be outgunned. We're going to be outspent. We're going to be outmuscled. I think the opportunity for us is to make sure we're not outsmarted. I think it's going to be coming up with a message that is based on what we are hearing from Vermonters and articulating it in a way that they're going to decide that we're a campaign and a candidate that's going to get things done that are going to be tough to do, but that we're going to do and not just talk about.
So, Ann, money might not be the most important thing in a political campaign, but you got to have enough to effectively get your message out, don't you?
Well, the problem for Scott Milne is that nobody knows who he is. And in 2010, you had President Pro Tem Peter Shumlin running, and he got his name out there by buying a lot of ads. You know, he put a couple $100,000 of his own money into the campaign, and he had a lot of ads in Chittenden County where he wasn't well known. Well, Milne has the same problem. He's not well known in Chittenden County, the most populous part of the state, and other parts of the state. And you got to have money to do that. And never mind actually talking about your platform and what you stand for. That's a whole nother set of ads that he would have to put out there. I'm also kind of surprised that Scott has not had many press conferences drawing attention to his stances on issues. And that's something that Dan Feliciano has gained some traction on. He's been able to attract press to some of his talks about health care and the economy.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to John in Stratford. Hi, John. What's on your mind today?
Hi. Good program. Hey, I'm a longtime Democratic activist. I was town chair in Stratford for over 20 years. And I decided this year to run as an independent for the House seat in our district. And I'm doing that for three reasons. One is school consolidation. You know, the push last session to try to create large regional school boards, I just thought was terrible. Two, we added more things to property taxes in the last session. I think property taxes are high enough. You can't keep adding programs to property taxes. And three, if you're going to overhaul the health care system, voters have to know in advance what the costs and benefits are. I think that there are a lot of people who are profoundly concerned about where the state of Vermont is headed, and that includes Democrats and independents as well as Republicans. And I think there's a lot more discontent out there than people realize and a lot more concern.
All right, John, we appreciate your phone call. Let's just shift gears over to the lieutenant governor's race for a second. It could be the most interesting race of this election season. Incumbent Republican Phil Scott is seeking a third term in office. He faces two challengers, Dean Corn, who is a progressive and a Democrat, and Marina Brown, who is the Liberty Union candidate. Now, Dean Corn has qualified for public financing. He raised roughly $18,000 from at least 750 donors. So he'll receive close to $200,000 from the state's campaign finance fund. And Corn is making this a big issue in his campaign. He says that Phil Scott is raising money from businesses and wealthy donors, and Corn says these donors definitely expect something in return from the candidate.
It's just silly to think that wealthy people who didn't generally get wealthy by being stupid, or corporations that didn't get successful by being stupid, are going to invest their money in something that doesn't have a payoff. It's just foolish.
But Phil Scott totally rejects Corn's analysis.
My first question isn't, did you give to my campaign? My first question is always, what can we do to help?
So, Pete, I suspect we're going to hear this theme from Dean Corn for the next 8 weeks, and he'll tie it into different issues as well. Is this an effective issue in this campaign?
It's not going to win in the election, and I don't think it's going to move a wide swath of the electorate. People are pretty inured at this point to the idea of money in politics, and unless Dean Corn can show that Phil Scott has given some sort of undue reward to somebody that offered him a campaign contribution, I don't think he's going to convince people who would otherwise have voted for Phil Scott to say, you know what, maybe I shouldn't do that. He's also got to be careful because he's going to be seeking some significant support, financial and otherwise, from the Democratic Party. And if he rides this issue too hard, nobody has raised more from corporations in this state than Peter Shumlin and the Democratic Party. So he's going to have to be careful not to bite the hand that he's hoping is going to feed him by thumping this issue hard over the next 8 weeks.
Healthcare will probably be a top issue in this race as well. Dean Corn has been a longtime supporter of a single-payer healthcare system.
The main reason I'm motivated to run now is because we are at this cusp of being on the verge of developing a real healthcare system for Vermont. And this has been a long time in coming.
Now, Phil Scott wants to see the details of Shumlin's single-payer plan before he opposes it. But Scott thinks lawmakers made a big mistake when they set up the state's health care exchange. The law mandated that all individuals and businesses with fewer than 50 employees had to go through the exchange to get their coverage. Scott says participation should have been voluntary, and he would like to see this provision changed.
And I think at this point in time, with the economy the way it is, that businesses are looking for some certainty, and this doesn't do it for them. So I'm, again, hoping that common sense will prevail, and this one-size-fits-all approach would be reconsidered.
So, Ann, does this become a key issue in this campaign?
Yes, because they're really sort of polar opposites, and that always makes for good debates.
And Terry, do you think the same elements that were in play when we discussed this in the governor's race, the difficult rollout of Vermont Health Connect, that kind of plays both ways in this whole health care debate in the lieutenant governor's race?
Sure. I mean, I think Phil Scott's, he's actually making a very similar argument to what Scott Millen is making. Maybe he's making it more simply. So somehow it's when you pair him up against Dean Corn, he's sounding like, okay, I'm the guy who maybe wouldn't do that thing that Dean Corn wants to do. But yeah, it's going to play out the same.
Let's turn to Elizabeth in Orwell. Hi, Elizabeth. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm wondering about the major issue of the fracked gas pipeline and how that would affect Vermont going forward in terms of building out infrastructure that'll be obsolete before it's even run the expansion, the end of its life. Shumlin's been a driver behind this, and two questions would be, where do either of the other candidates, where do they stand on this? And I'm curious as to why the governor feels that it's okay to basically sell out the state for the benefit of two out-of-country Canadian companies and international paper to get something that's going to benefit them but really doesn't have a lot of benefit for most Vermonters, just a handful of corporations.
Okay, so, Elizabeth, we'll see if... Terry, have you heard the candidates talk about this issue?
Actually, no. And I think it's one of the things that's eroding support for Peter Shumlin is his willingness to go along with fracking and with the pipeline and his support of it. But I think we haven't had any sense that the other candidates would do anything different based on everything they've said about what they think, you know, that we should be pro-business and economic development.
And Pete, you know, the governor would make an argument that this is kind of a temporary solution, temporary being 20 years, because he makes a big deal about alternative energy sources. Do you think he's in for some criticism in his support for this?
Well, certainly. He already has come under some pretty heavy fire from some activist groups and also some Vermonters who are in the path of this pipeline and also people who are just you know, constitutionally opposed to the idea of expanding carbon-emitting energy infrastructure. But I think the level of pressure that would come down on Peter Shumlin were he to reverse his position on this pipeline would be far greater than what he's experiencing now as a result of supporting it. And Peter Shumlin enjoys the support right now of most every significant business interest in this state. And one of the reasons that he does so is because he has made a habit of getting behind projects like this natural gas pipeline.
Today in the program, we've got a reporter's roundtable. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today we have a reporter's roundtable looking at the people and issues of Campaign 2014. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. What are the key issues for you? We'd love to know if it's health care, education, tax rates, whatever you think are the most significant issues. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. We've been talking about this race for lieutenant governor. This week, we found out that Dean Corn did get enough votes, write-in votes, to win the Democratic nomination. And his decision to go into that Democratic primary has really split members of the Democratic Party. Senate President John Campbell was one of the first leaders of the party to support Republican Phil Scott.
What I've admired about him most is that he has not been partisan up there. He's not made any partisan rulings when he certainly could have. He is genuinely a person who's looking to do the best for Vermont and Vermonters, and I find that admirable.
But Windsor Senator Dick McCormick said he would definitely support Corn if Corn won the Democratic nomination, which he did.
Phil is a friend I've worked with for years, work well with. And Dean, you know, the public financing is very admirable. I have tended to agree with him on most issues. So for a lot of us, I think, it creates a real dilemma.
So, Terry, this split in the Democratic Party, how significant is it and how could it affect the outcome of this race?
It's significant, but I don't know that it's going to, like, fracture the Democratic Party. I think people will be allowed to do whatever it is that they wanted. But where it the fascinating thing to me will be to watch what kind of support does the does the Democratic Party infrastructure give to Dean Corn? How much of their secrets do they reveal to him? Do they share their voter list, which is a pretty valuable entity? And if they share it with Dean Corn, aren't they, in a sense, sharing it with the entire Progressive Party, because Chris Pearson will be poring over it, and that's a team thing. You know, you don't let the other team into your locker room for a strategy session. So, and I think they're still discussing that in the Democratic Party of what would an endorsement mean, and what how much support are we going to give this guy?
So, Ann, the Democratic State Committee will meet in a couple of weeks to decide, first off, do we want to endorse Dean Corn? And then perhaps secondly, as Terry mentioned, what does that support mean? Are we going to give him access to a lot of voter ID information? Are we going to include his name on mailings? Will we do get out the vote for him? What do you think the Democrats are going to do?
I'm not sure. I think they are generally supportive, but who knows when the rubber hits the road. But it's sort of make or break for Corn. He really needs them to reach a wider electorate, to get beyond his progressive base. And they seem to be enthusiastic about him at the last state committee meeting. But, you know, and the governor has endorsed him. And I think that might have come as a surprise, perhaps, to Phil Scott, who's a good friend of the governor's, but maybe they'll signal one thing through endorsement and not give him support in another way. Who knows? Politics can be strange that way. But I'm not sure how much credence I would put into the split in the Senate over Corn, because I'm not sure, and I hate to say this, but I'm not sure that the senators have much sway with the electorate statewide in a general election. I mean, I think people in the building, the state house, care, but I'm not sure that that's as important as the state committee meeting.
And Pete, right now the Democrats are firmly in charge at the state house. The Democrats have huge majorities both in the House and Senate. Of course, Governor Peter Shumlin is a Democrat. We're going to hear Phil Scott talking about the need to have balance in the state house. Is this a good selling point for him?
It has been in the past, and I think it's a concept that resonates with Vermonters who have relatively recently had a age-old tradition of splitting their ticket. And what you're going to hear Dean Corn do is try to use his Progressive Party affiliation to make the same case that Phil Scott is going to make. Look, I'm not a Democrat. I'm borrowing their label for the purposes of this election, but make no mistake, I'm a progressive, and I think progressives more generally see an opening here in the political void that is opened up by the just dissipation of GOP power in this state to become the other major party. That they're already a major party, of course, but to move into that space that Republicans have lost and become the counterbalance to the Democratic majority.
Now, Terry, Corn supports increasing taxes on the wealthy in order to provide essential services to all Vermonters. He thinks some key human service programs have been cut back way too much and that it's fair to ask wealthy people to contribute more for the operations of state government. Taxes. Will this be a key issue in this campaign?
Well, I think it's a key issue throughout the election. So it's on voters' minds as they're voting for whichever race. And I think maybe it's one that we've not touched on enough because the health care is obviously fascinating. But the pocketbook issue that people are really also feeling is this: what do we do about property taxes? What do we do about schools and how we pay for them? And then how do we raise taxes to pay for programs is certainly going to be high on voters' minds.
And as we've discussed, the Democrats have a huge majority at the state house. In the House, I think there are 48 Republicans. In the Senate, there are 7. Now, they think they've got a great chance this November to pick up some seats, maybe 8 to 10 seats in the House, perhaps 3 seats, 4 seats in the Senate. How realistic is that?
Not very. I mean, Eric Davis thinks that maybe they'll pick up 1 in the Senate. maybe three or four in the House. And I have to say, I think I have to agree with him, because at this point, Milne isn't sort of giving them much of a mantle to run, you know, to hang on to in this election cycle. And, you know, the Democrats rule in the state right now for whatever reason, and it's very difficult for the Republican Party to raise money to support their candidates, too. So we'll see what happens, but I think it's probably a pretty depressing time to be a Republican. I mean, I think when you were talking earlier about Phil Scott, you know, he's the only Republican statewide candidate. You got, what, six seats, statewide seats up for grabs, and four of them are held by incumbents, and they're not going anywhere. So they don't even have real challengers. So it really, politics has really shifted in the state, and I don't know.
The fact that Doug Hoffer won the Republican nomination in the primary through write-ins. He doesn't want the Republican nomination, but he's a progressive and a Democrat, and because the Republicans fielded no candidate, and it surprised him. Really, that many Republicans voted for me in the primary?
Same is true in the Secretary of State's race, where Jim Condos got enough write-in votes to be the Republican candidate, and State Treasurer Beth Pierce also got enough write-in votes to be...
That kind of thing has happened before,
that's
though,
right.
And it's just that Hoffer is a little farther left, and so that was the surprise there.
So, Pete, we've been talking about health care in the race for governor and the race for lieutenant governor. Do we see it filtering down to any legislative races as well?
You know, when you talk to legislative candidates about what they hear from their constituents when they knock on doors, it isn't single-payer health care. They hear about education. They hear about property taxes. They hear about jobs. And I think that when the conversation about single-payer segues from being about this idea to being about the financing plan that would be used to pay for it, it will become more of a Main Street issue. Right now, though, it's kind of a fascinating disconnect between the amount of time that people like you and me and Terry and Ann spend talking about single payer, and the extent to which this is a dinner time conversation that people are having at home.
And property tax reform is probably something on the minds of a lot of voters and lawmakers as they go door to door. But is this a case where people can say, well, yes, I think your property taxes are too high and I'll do something about it if I get reelected, but it's hard to be specific about this issue?
Well, it's very much like the financing plan for single payer. You know, I think there hasn't been a plan that's been put forward that people can get behind. So they don't really know what the plan might be. But Jim Condon, a rep from Colchester, has been pushing this plan in which, you know, a lot more of the education funding would come from income taxes, and there'd be a much lower statewide property tax. And that could be a game changer. And that's why I think they're going to include single payer in that mix, because if they need income taxes to help pay for single payer, they're going to have to consider that if they go with the property tax, it also relies on that source of revenue.
Well, in 60 days, voters will cast their ballots for all these races, and early voting will start in just a few weeks. It'll be fascinating to see how it all turns out. Many thanks to our panel today, Terry Hallenbeck, Ann Galloway, and Pete Hirschfeld. We really appreciate you coming by. Thanks very much.
Good to be with you, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
And that is Vermont Edition for today. On Monday, we'll explore the complicated issues that arise when grandparents raise their grandkids. About 4,000 children in Vermont are being raised by family members other than their parents. In the vast majority of these cases, the parents' drug addiction prompted grandparents to step in and care for the grandchildren. We'll learn more Monday on Vermont Edition. Our producers are Patty Daniels, Rick Sangari, and Sage Van Wing. We have production assistance from Aaron Lucy. Mary Williams directed the show. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.